Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a trade deadline edition of PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz. And Gordon, right now, less than 24 hours before the 4 p.m. deadline on Monday, Phillies have not made a deal yet. But probably the most interesting piece of news to come out was Friday's news, and I guess maybe John Morosi from MLB Network actually had it before that. But the idea that Vince Velasquez is someone that the Phillies are talking about trading. Jim Salisbury from CSNPhilly.com reporting that the Phillies were in serious or deep discussions, I think is the way he put it, about trading Velasquez. And my question to you is, should they even be entertaining offers for Vince Velasquez?
Well, I guess you always want to see what it, you know, Texas always seems to have a lot of prospects to spare. They gave up, as we know, four pretty good ones to get Cole Hamels last year. So I guess you know, and they have some guys now. They have the power hitter, Gallo, and a couple other guys. And I guess if they're willing to part with one of those guys, you have to weigh the pros and cons. But, you know, Velasquez has been the Phillies' best pitcher this year. And, you know, I guess you really, this is where your talent evaluation has to come in. Do you think he is a legit number one? Is he a number two? Is he, you know, what is his long range prospectus look like, you know? And weigh, you know, the pros and cons of, you know, a long-term solution in your starting rotation. First, you know, an everyday middle of the batting order guy. You know, if you get a guy like Gallo, if he's your, you know, middle of the lineup guy that they have for the next 8-10 years. I mean, it's worth considering. That said, I read something today from Jim Salisbury saying it now seems it's kind of cooled off and it doesn't seem quite as likely. So I think the Phillies are probably asking for a lot, knowing it would take a lot to pry him away, and they probably asked a little too much for him. So I think we're back to just the Hellickson watch at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it was always going to take, I think, a lot to get him. But I was just even questioning whether, especially considering that they're trying to move Hellickson. Well, you know, those are their two best starters so far this year, Hellickson and Velasquez. And obviously, trading Hellickson makes a lot of sense. He's going to be a free agent. You don't know, you know, maybe not part of the future, 2 or 3 years down the road. But I was just a little surprised to see Velasquez's name in there. Josh Landsberg's with us as well. Josh, what was your reaction to even Velasquez even being mentioned in trade deals? Do you think that's something they should have even been considering?
I was a little surprised, just reading up on your article now on PhillyFanatics.com. I was a little surprised about this, to be honest. But at the same time, you can't really be surprised about anything at the trade deadline. Anything's possible. And, you know, I think there's some good points made that he has been their best starter for them this year, but he doesn't go deep into games. And he's a guy that maybe he's not a true ace. Maybe he's a number two guy, but maybe the Rangers view him as a potential ace or that number two guy. And they do have a lot of prospects, as Gordon mentioned, and that could be a good trade partner. I think you have to entertain any type of offer, but unless they get kind of the king's ransom, as they say, I don't think they should trade him. I think he is part of their future. I think he's a really good, solid pitcher, a young pitcher, a guy they got in the Giles deal, and a guy that can be a part of their future. So I don't think they should trade him, but if they get, you know, back something crazy, like really good prospects, maybe, you know, something like in the Cole Hamels deal, if they get something like that, which I don't think they will, but if they do get something in the Cole Hamels type deal, you know, maybe a few good pitchers and a really good position player, then I think it's something you have to entertain. But besides that, I think they should keep him.
Yeah, and both of you brought up, you do have to decide what he is. You know, is he, I mean, he's your best pitcher now with Aaron Nola slumping and with everybody else just a little too young or whatever, and he's not old. But, right, is he going to be the ace in the future? Or, you know, one of the problems he obviously has is, as good as his stuff is, he throws way too many pitches. I mean, he's only averaging about 5.5 innings per start, and it's not because he's getting, you know, knocked out of the game in the third inning. He just throws too many pitches, and they have to take him out. But we do have a caller on the line. Caller, identify yourself with your name, please, and do you have a question? Okay, well, you can just hang in there and listen. That's fine. Gordon, let's go to the other guy, the most often mentioned name, and we talked about other names. We talked about Cameron Rupp and Carlos Ruiz. Peter Borges and Andres Blanco both getting injured probably hurts their chances of being traded, especially Blanco's out for like 6 weeks with a surgery on his finger. But let's stick with Jeremy Hellickson. Really consistent pitcher. He had 9 starts in a row of at least 6 innings until this last one where he pitched 5 2/3. And had a minor injury. The Phillies must have been nervous there. He's a palm injury, although it's said to be minor. My question is, should they even entertain – it's the opposite of Velasquez's question. Should they even entertain keeping Jeremy Hellickson on this roster?
I don't see any real good reason to do it because, you know, they have some pitchers ready to come up. So, you know, it's not like they'll be hurting, you know, in their rotation. Even if they did trade Velasquez, I think they would be able to replace him with at least a fifth guy that they could get by with. Yeah, I think you almost have to because he's not signed through this season. I guess they could, you know, do that. But, you know, some of the other trades that have happened in the league have kind of jacked up his price a little bit. I don't think they're, you know, originally they were talking for, they wanted somebody's top 5 prospect, and that maybe seemed a little too much. Maybe you would get two prospects that are on somebody's 6-10 list, but not top 5. But, you know, maybe you can get some team's top 5, one of their top 5 prospects. And, you know, if you could do that plus one other guy thrown in, I think you almost have to do it. You know, the Phillies are doing a nice job of collecting prospects. A mid-season list came out. They have 5 out of the top 100. I think they were 3rd in baseball behind Pittsburgh and, I believe, Texas. So, you know, why not move up that list? And, you know, I mean, it's actually amazing turn of events that were even from 2-3 years ago when the Phillies couldn't even dent the top 100 with anybody. So if you can keep compiling these guys without going completely in the Sixers mode where you're just constantly rebuilding and rebuilding, if there's a viable trade chip out there that isn't really going to hurt you too much to get rid of, you know, I think it's almost a no-brainer as long as you have the right dance partner. And, you know, it looks right now like maybe Baltimore, one or two other teams might be, you know Baltimore's kind of with smoke and mirrors hanging in the race in the AL East, you know, with, I think, a team ERA over 5, but yet they're right in it, and they could really use a guy like him and, you know, take a look at their prospects, see what you need, and do something. I think it's pretty much a no-brainer, and I think you could find another team somewhere that it's a no-brainer for them as well.
Okay. Josh, let me just turn the question a little bit different way. If Jeremy Hellickson is with this team still after 4 o'clock Monday, is that a failure on the part of general manager Matt Klentak?
Yeah, I think it is because I think he's not part of their future. I think he's, you know, he's a free agent after this year. I don't think they're going to sign him to a long-term deal. They got a lot of young pitchers that are already on the roster and could be coming up in the roster. Jake Thompson is a guy that's pitched really well in the minor leagues. And I think that, you know, they have younger guys. Hellickson is not old by any means, but he's not a young guy either. He's kind of middle of the pack in terms of a starting pitcher in baseball. So he's a guy that's been around for a little bit, and it's good to have a veteran sometimes on the roster, but I think that this is a team that's still rebuilding and still looking toward the future, and they want to get the young pitchers in there and get guys that can be better than Jeremy Hellickson and fill out this rotation. And Jeremy Hellickson is a guy that's a little bit above average in terms of pitcher, but he's not, you know, he's not an ace. He's not a number two. He's more of a best or 4 type of starter. So you do need those guys at times, but I think if you could get something in return for him, I think that a contender would really look at a guy like Jeremy Hellickson and help bolster their rotation and put him in the number 3 or number 4 spot in their rotation to make a playoff push. I think that would be a failure if he's not able to move Hellickson, because I think that they really can get some pieces back for him that could help them for the future as well.
Okay, I'm going to ask you guys what you think's going to happen, but before we do that, we do have a couple callers on the line, so let me give them an opportunity to ask a question. They don't have to if they don't want to, but caller's last 3 numbers of your phone number are 684. Do you have a question? Okay. Caller whose last 3 numbers are 789, do you have a question?
Sure.
I'd like to find out
your name, please.
I'm sorry, Bill.
Okay.
And my question is, the expression, sometimes the best trades you make are the ones you don't make. and addition by subtraction or subtraction by addition. Do you think the Phillies have a specific need they can get that Hellespie can fulfill, or are they just going to be restocking their minor leagues with suspects?
Gordon or Josh, you want to take that or you want me to take it?
I believe the question was, would the Phillies just get a minor leaguer, or would they get somebody else to fill a roster spot now? Was that the question?
Yeah, they seem to be overloaded at outfielder and catcher, two real strong positions in need. And with Hellickson on the block, what are they actually going to get for him? He's been pitching well for them.
Yeah,
he's been helping them.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about prospects, you can pretty much get anybody because, you know, they're probably a year or two away and you don't know how things are going to unfold. So it could be you probably wouldn't want to look at a shuffle-ready shortstop unless you can move him to another position because you have J.P. Crawford coming and you have Franco at third base. But pretty much anywhere else, I mean, you play three outfielders every day, so it wouldn't hurt to add an outfielder, even if he becomes a platoon player at first, and you know, or somebody who could maybe platoon with Tommy Joseph down the road at first base, maybe a left-handed hitting outfielder first baseman type guy. And it never hurts to have catchers. You know, you always build your teams up the middle. And pitchers, you always collect pitchers and see how that works out. So, you know, I think when you're talking about prospects, you're pretty much wide open.
Well, that's when you say you have Hellickson. Always needs pitching. He's a veteran presence on a team with nothing but young arms, and he may help in that. Then maybe it's best to keep him.
He's not really going to be here until past this season. So, and the Phillies aren't really going to go anywhere this season. So, it's just short term thinking versus long term thinking. Unless they do re-sign him for another year or two, then he does remain that veteran presence. So, I guess that's what they have to weigh a little bit.
Okay,
the risk there, though, is if you don't trade him, and this is why I asked Josh the question about whether it be a failure on Matt Klentak's part if they don't trade him. If you don't trade him and then you lose him in free agency for nothing, you look really bad. I mean, if they're not going to trade him, then they almost have to, almost overpay to re-sign him, because if they don't trade him and then he leaves, it just looks bad to get nothing back for a guy who's a pretty solid starter. And there's enough teams out there that need him. So, in terms of what they'll get back, I'm with Gordon. I think they're going to go for a prospect. Maybe someone who's closer to the major leagues, though. We're not talking about like a single-A guy who's going to get here in 3 years. But there's, on the other hand, there is the pressure on the Phillies to either trade him or sign him. So, yes, there's a pretty good market out there. There's not a lot of pitchers of his quality available, so it's a good year to have him. But on the other hand, you know, they kind of know the Phillies either have to trade him or risk losing him for nothing. So thank you for the question. Good question. Josh, gut feeling, tomorrow, you know, a little less than 24 hours from now, what will the Phillies have done?
Ooh, it's hard to say. I mean, nothing's happened yet, things can happen in the 11th hour. I think they will end up trading Hellickson. I think they need to move him. I think that he's the guy that's most likely to go. I think that there are a lot of teams out there that are interested in him, so I think they will end up trading Hellickson and hopefully get some good prospects back in return. But I don't think they're going to trade Vince Velasquez. I think that they're going to end up keeping him, and I don't see too many other any other trades for them, because Cameron Rupp has been a good presence. Maybe Carlos Ruiz gets moved. That's a possibility. He's a veteran catcher. He could be a good backup for a team or even a starter for a team. So maybe Carlos Ruiz gets moved, but I think Cameron Rupp stays as well.
Okay. Gordon, your thoughts on what you think is going to happen in the next 24 hours?
Yeah, same thing. I think Velasquez was more, you know, Texas kicking the tires with the Phillies. I don't think the Phillies were shopping him at all. I think, like we said, Hellickson will – I'd say it's probably an 80% chance he's gone, and if he's not gone he will probably be gone by the the August 31st trade deadline. By the end of the season, he will not. It's almost impossible that he'll be here. I guess anything's possible, but close to impossible that he'll be here. But I think there's a really good chance he'll be gone, and it won't be great prospects, but maybe two or three pretty good prospects. you know, both sides can, whoever the team ends up being, can feel good about what they did. If it's, because once you get pennant fever, it's like you don't think clearly if your team has pennant fever, and maybe you give up a little more than you should prospect wise. And when you're in rebuilding mode, you're thinking differently as well. So, you know, as long as they find the right team, and there's enough other teams in the league, they could find somebody. I think he'll be gone, and I think somebody, you know, Josh mentioned Ruiz, somebody from it's Ruiz or Howard. They're the last remaining guys from that championship team. One of those guys, it's a prediction, will be gone.
Yeah, I think someone else will be gone too. And I wouldn't be shocked, by the way, I'll throw another name out there. Cody Ashe might be the guy who goes, because if you have Altair up here already and Nick Williams going to come up, Borges was the obvious guy, but with him being hurt, I don't know if they can move him. But I agree with you on Hellickson. I think he's got to be the guy. Gordon, you weren't with us last week.
Right.
And we had Ed Kratz on, and we talked a lot of training camp. The whole show almost was training camp. So let me ask you, they've started training camp. We finished the first week now. Ryan Matthews hasn't practiced at all, nor has Brandon Brooks, the right guard they signed. But Ryan Matthews hasn't played yet because of an ankle injury. What's your level of concern?
Well, you look at Ryan Matthews' career. I mean, when he plays, he's a top shelf back. He's a borderline Pro Bowl running back when he plays. You know, that's the qualifying thing there. So to be this early in the process where it hasn't even hit yet in camp, when he's expected to take a lion's share of the workload in the regular season. You know, they don't really have, I mean, maybe Wendell Smallwood, the running back, the rookie running back, will work his way into that role, or Kenyon Barner as a, change of pace type backs. But really, he's going to be the guy who carries the ball 15 to 20 times a game. So, and I think if he stays healthy, he can be extremely productive. If it's going to be a similar offense to Kansas City, you could look at, Jamaal Charles. And when Jamaal Charles got hurt, some of the other backs that they used were like kind of no-name guys, and they even put up yardage. It's kind of the offense is kind of designed to, pick up some yardage on the ground and, be methodical, almost like the flip side of Chip Kelly's. And you really need that running back running behind, more of a power running game. And he's the guy to do it. He's a guy that can get to that second level and break tackles, and he can do all those things, but he's got to stay healthy. So, yeah, that was cause for concern. That being said, from what I understand, he is supposed to be back on the practice field this week. If I were them, I would limit his exposure to hits on the practice field and in the preseason games.
Yeah, it's a little concerning. I agree that he's, like I said, with his because of his history. If it wasn't for his history, no big deal. But because of his history, the fact that he already has an ankle injury, it has to be a little worrisome. Josh Gordon brought up a different style of offense this year, and he brought up the Kansas City model, Doug Peterson, and, the running a lot, short passes, get it down the field. And I guess my question for you is, they did that with Alex Smith at quarterback. Is that the right system for Sam Bradford?
Yeah, I think it is. He's a guy that is, at least he showed in the last seven games of last year, that he can be really accurate throwing the ball for short passes. He's a guy that can kind of play that West Coast offense style. He can throw those short passes, and he gets the ball quickly out of his hands. He can be accurate in those short type passes. And I think you're going to see a lot of that, them moving the ball down the field. We've seen with one of the greatest franchises and teams ever under Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they don't throw the ball down the field that much. They kind of move the ball methodically down the field and make short passes, and they've been very successful doing that. So if they could kind of implement that same type of system, I think they could be successful. They do have to have a deep threat once in a while, and hopefully you have some of their speedsters. Josh Huff has been a huge disappointment since he's been drafted, but maybe he finally breaks out this year. He's a speedster. He can hopefully have better ball security. They got a couple other guys that they picked up as free agents and in the draft. So hopefully they can have a wide receiver emerge as a deep threat. But I think that they are going to have Darren Sproles involved a lot more out of the backfield, catching passes. He's a guy that's a speed threat and a guy that can make some moves and some plays. So I think it could be a good system for Sam Bradford to be successful.
Thank you. Good points. Gordon, another position, and you weren't on last week, and I think we did talk about this briefly, and you might have even brought it up the week before, or maybe it was in your when you were talking about the 53-man roster on PhillyFanatics.com when you wrote that story. Kicker, reports out of camp so far are that Cody Parkey's, you know, it's early, but he's struggling a little bit, and it's Caleb Sturgis has been the better kicker. What's your read on that situation or your level of concern with Parkey's performance so far?
Granted, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. When you had asked me the last time I was on about two areas of to watch in camp, and I said offensive line and the secondary in terms of competition for positions, and I was going to get into kicker, but for the sake of time, I didn't, because you really have a situation. They thought enough of Sturgis and had enough concern, I guess, about Parkey, because it is the same special teams coach. And they had enough to, you know, concern with one and confidence in the other after struggling. Sturgis struggled when he first got here, but he got better. To let them come in and really battle it out. And I think it will be a fair and square battle for that job. I think from what we saw from both guys, Parkey 2 years ago and Sturgis last year, that Parkey, if they're on their game, he's the better kicker. But so much of that, I'm not a big golf guy, but so much of that, you can have all the mechanics down, and I guess it's like golf in a sense, even though you have your stroke and your mechanics, so much of that is psychological. And when things don't go your way, you press a little too hard, and if you know so much of kicking is it's as much in your head as it is in your legs. So is Parkey back in the same mindset he was as a rookie, who kind of felt like he had nothing to lose as an undrafted guy traded here at, right at the end of training camp from the Colts? Now he's coming off an injury. He's got a guy pressing him for his job. You know, psychologically, does he feel the team has the same kind of confidence in him? You know, all those things, is that weighing on his mind? So, you know, I don't know. You know, Sturgis has a strong leg as well. He's not quite as accurate, but he shows he's a pro kicker. I don't know if he could ever kick at a Pro Bowl level, and Parkey has shown that he has. So it is concerning if Sturgis is out kicking him right now, because Parkey's upside, I think, from what we've seen, should be a little higher than what Sturgis' upside is, but a kicker can lose you games, and you don't want to lose games because of your kicker. So I think it'll be a fair and square battle, and it'll be as much on the practice field as it will be in games, because sometimes you get into games and the guy who's supposed to get his shot that week never gets any opportunities to kick any field goals, and you can't really go by that. You can't let somebody win or lose a job that way. So it'll go a lot on the practice field, and we can't see a lot of what's happening there, so I guess we have to go by what we hear. It's funny, I asked Nick Fierro on Facebook one day who looked better, and he said Parkey did, and you're telling me that Sturgis has looked better. So I guess it's a long way to go, and it's four preseason games and a lot of practices, and I guess we'll have to see what they feel the most confident in, who they envision game on the line, 3 seconds left, 45, 50-yard field goal, who they would feel better putting out on the field. You know, that would be the question they would ultimately have to ask themselves.
It's funny you said that, because Nick Fierro, the Eagles beat writer for the Morning Call, and as they say, a friend of the program, and he's been on this program. I was basing my opinion. I have not been at Eagles practice, but I was basing my opinion on some of Nick's live tweets from practice today at the link about Parkey's field goal kicking. So he actually is my thing. Speaking of which, summer really flies by. Next week's show, not only will we be discussing what the Phillies did or did not do at the trade deadline, but we actually will be talking about things to look forward to, what we want to see in the first Eagles preseason game, which will be the following Thursday. So I'm sure kicker will come up next week as well. Josh, last week we talked about Braden Shen heading to arbitration. Last Sunday we talked about him heading to arbitration Monday morning and how damaging an arbitration hearing can be in terms of the relationship between the player and his team. The Flyers, the very last minute, they asked the judge for the arbitrator for an extension, and they finished out working out a deal. 4 years, $20.5 million. Too much, too little, just about right.
I think that's just about right. Maybe a tad high, possibly. Maybe he's more of a $3 or $4 million type player, but that's about $5 million a year. But I think that's just about right. They had to make a move. They didn't want to go to arbitration, and it's good they got it done. I believe I mentioned on the show last week, it was really important for them to make a deal and get it done before going to arbitration to avoid that humiliation and embarrassment for Braden Shen. And we've seen it with guys in the past and not working out so well and hurt feelings and all that type of stuff. So I think it was a good move. He's a valuable player for this team. He's been a good player for this team over the past few years, and I think it was a good move overall. Maybe slightly a tad bit too high, I would say. Maybe he's more of a $4 million type player, not a $5 million type player, but sometimes you have to overpay a little bit in hockey and in all sports pretty much. So I think they made a good deal.
Gordon, how about you? Is that about the right deal or what you expected him to get, or was it more or less?
Yeah, it's about right. I would agree with Josh. Maybe if an arbitrator would see it differently, as they would see that as a little high. But if you look at it from the context of the Flyers and what their needs are, they kind of really need another guy like him who can put the puck in the net. They don't have a lot of guys who can eclipse that 20-goal mark who have the capability to do that. And, you know, he's coming off career highs and goals and assists and everything last year. And he seemed to find a place on the left wing up on that top line, you know. And I think earlier in his career when he didn't really produce, I think he got kind of jerked around the lineup a lot between center and wing and different lines and different combinations. And it was kind of hard to, you get a feel for him, and I think people got down on him a little bit, and I don't know if it was all his fault, and I think it's not a coincidence that he happened to have his best year with the new coach. You know, I think he clicked better with, I think Dave Haxtell's, it took him a little while early in the season, but I think he's able to read guys and kind of figure out, you know, what their roles should be, and he was a little more creative with his lines, and he got some combinations going, and, you know, he separated Voracek and Drew a lot during the season. Didn't really work out so well for Voracek, but it helped Shen out. And, I think that has a lot to do with why he produced. And he was, you know, I think a lot of this also has to go with the fact that he was a real high draft pick. And when he came out, was considered, a blue chip prospect. And so he's not like some guy who you might think, well, he's kind of maxed out talent-wise. The opposite might be true. You might be thinking, here's a guy who's, and maybe it took a few years to really live up to his expectations, but, you know, now he's really, starting to turn that corner. You know, I don't really buy, certainly in hockey, I don't buy it. Maybe I'm naive. I don't buy that a guy just happens to decide to play well in his contract year. You know, I think it has more to do with the new coach, and he finally found a home on the with his right line mates, and he was able to click with them more so than, you know, he just decided to turn it on and play a little better when it was contract year. Maybe I'm naive to think that. Maybe it goes on to basketball a little bit, but I don't think that the hockey players are, by and large, made that way. So I certainly don't like that. I think it more has to do with Haxtell really seeing a guy with some ability, trying to find the right place for him, whether it was center or wing, and who he fit well with, and then making it work from there. So, with all that, I think it's probably the right price for the context of the Flyers and where he fits in presently and in the future.
Good points. I might be I'm channeling Ron Haxtell a little bit. I'm interpreting his comments. But I think basically what he said in the aftermath is, maybe we're paying a little more these first 2 years than we want to. But, there was some talk and some stories from different media outlets, like I think it was mostly from CSNPhilly.com, that, maybe they'll do a shorter deal. And that might have made sense money-wise. The problem was if you have him for 2 years and he has two really good years, Braden Chen would be eligible for free agency once he turns 27, unrestricted free agency, not like this year where he's a restricted free agent. And I think Hextall's point was, maybe they overpay now, but if he is, if he does continue to develop and he does continue to get better, they'd be paying a lot more in 2 years to try to keep him. So it might be, like I said, a little, again, paraphrasing Hextall or trying to interpret what he said. I think he's saying maybe they're paying a little too much these first 2 years, more than they wanted to at least, but it might save them money, in the third and fourth year of this deal where they might have had to pay a lot more to get them. Before we go off the live broadcast, I want to give a caller 684 one more chance to ask a question. Okay. We're gonna head for archive for our final thoughts, but just to wrap up, really an eventful week. Philly's trade deadline, a lot of talk going on. Vince Velasquez rumors, Jeremy Hellickson, obviously a big rumor. There haven't been a lot of major deals yet. Chapman going to the Cubs from the Yankees was the biggest deal. The Marlins got a couple starting pitchers, but a lot of shoes to drop tomorrow before 4 o'clock. Eagles' first week of training camp, you know, and everything's news. Eagles' training camp, everything's news. So I'm sure we'll get some more stuff coming up in the next week before the leading up to that first game the following week. Flyers signing Braden Schenn, lots of good stuff coming on, and the Olympics start on Friday. So check out PhillyFanatics.com for my column, my fish and chips column, my column about the DNC convention comparing to Eagles training camp, fish and chips, Vince Velasquez story, lots of great stuff. Please check it out. We'll talk to you next week. Now that we're in archive, let's go to final thoughts. Josh, start us off.
All right, I'm going to go back to the Eagles. We're talking about them a little bit this week, and I'm going to go to one of the one of the favorite Eagles, one of the most favorite players all time for fans, and that's Brian Dawkins. He rejoins the team. I'm not surprised at all. I thought that after his career was over, he'd come back to the Eagles. He joins the scouting department for the team, and he becomes another former player that joins the team. You have wide receivers coach and Greg Lewis and running back coach and Deuce Daly and, of course, head coach and Doug Peterson, former quarterback for the Eagles. So I think it's never a bad thing when you have alumni join the team, when you have former players join the team. They know the team well. They were here under the Andy Reid era, a lot of them, and they had a lot of success. Obviously, they didn't win the ultimate prize in the Super Bowl, but they had a lot of success. They know what it takes to win. And I think that it's a great thing that Brian Dawkins rejoins the team. You know, there was some bad blood a little bit when he went to the Broncos. The Eagles didn't want to overpay for him toward the end of his career, and he had a couple good years with the Broncos. And, there was some bad blood a little bit there, so I'm glad that it's not, too bad that he's able to come back and join the team. So I think that it's really nice that Brian Dawkins comes back. Hopefully he helps out the Eagles, and you could see a lot of success down the road.
Good points, Josh. Thank you. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, also with the Eagles, I think it was a most significant thing, I think, to come out so far is that they extended Darren Sproles for at least one more season, right? And I think that he is going to be a big part of their offense this year. I think it was borderline criminal how he was underused by Chip Kelly, but that could be a blessing because for a guy his age and for apparently how he takes care of himself, apparently in terms of training and a work ethic, nobody outworks him. He's one of those guys, if he run a play, he runs it all the way for a touchdown every time, that he probably has, a lot of mileage left, and even though he's over 30, he can take on a heavier workload in terms of probably mostly catching the ball out of the backfield, but also carrying the ball a little bit on draws and screens and things like that as a third down back. And I think that tells us a lot that they didn't even want to wait until midseason to sign him. And he really is a big that they're so impressed with what they've seen so far that they really wanted to re-up him now. And I think he and Zach Ertz are really going to offset the fact that they don't really have too much at receiver outside of Jordan Matthews. Another quick point, football-related and Eagles-related somewhat. It's kind of funny. Just a few short years ago, Nick Foles had, that amazing season, and one of his prime targets was Riley Cooper. And as of right now, neither one is on an NFL roster. Nick Foles was let go this week. But he asked to be let go by the Rams, but nobody's picked him up yet. And Riley Cooper was a free agent at the end of the season, and he's still a free agent now. But nobody has taken a shot at him to come in as a fourth wide receiver / special teams guy. It's just kind of interesting just what a difference a few years can make. If you looked around that stadium, there used to be a lot of Foles jerseys and a lot of Cooper jerseys, and every time Cooper would make a catch, everybody would go Coop and all that kind of thing. And now he's out of the league, and Foles will probably get a job somewhere. But I just find that kind of interesting how things can change so fast.
Yeah, I'll give you three potential destinations for Nick Foles. I'm not saying I'm going to be right. I'll throw a fourth one in there. But three of them have Eagles connections, or at least somewhat. One is Kansas City with Andy Reid as a backup, because obviously Reid's the one who drafted him. Two, and this Eagles connection tenuous, but the Dallas Cowboys with Tony Romo getting hurt all the time. Could use certainly another quarterback in there. And three would be the Denver Broncos, where Mark Sanchez is already there and already is apparently not having a very good camp.
Right.
The other one I would think about for him, by the way, would be the Dolphins, but We'll see where he ends up.
One more. Seattle really doesn't have a solid backup behind behind Russell Wilson, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him go there either. So just a couple other things to keep in mind.
Yeah, he might actually end up with a pretty good team, as it turns out.
Yeah, don't be surprised if he ends up with a good team. Right, right.
Yeah, especially if he's brought in as a backup, whatever. My final thought has to do with a big event in Philadelphia this past week, and in my column, I compared the Democratic National Convention, the Eagles training camp, some of the similarities. And our wrestling writer, Achilles Heel, also found some WWE similarities at the DNC convention. And Gordon, I don't know if you saw it, by the way, you were away the week before. He took a shot at you last week, pointing out that his mock draft for the WWE was more accurate than your NFL draft. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't. Well, okay.
Yeah, I think his first seven picks went to the right brand, right show, so I don't know that. But anyway,
at least I'm writing about a real sport. So.
I had flashbacks at the Democratic National Convention, back to the Broad Street Bully days. First 2 days, actually all 4 days, but I heard those Bernie chants. I thought Perrant came out. And then, I found it was Bernie Sanders, but I thought Perrant was back, came out of retirement there. And then I heard the USA, USA chants on that last night, and I thought maybe they were playing the Russians again. So South Philly rocking like it was the Broad Street Bullies was a nice flashback, whatever your political views are. It was fun, and like I said, it reminded me of the all-time Spectrum and the Flyers. I don't know why, just the USA chants, like I said, especially the Bernie chants. Every time I heard that, I was thinking Bernie Perrant, obviously knowing that's not what it was. But it brought back some good memories down there in South Philadelphia. That's it for this week's show. Thank you to Josh Landsberg. Thanks to Gordon Glantz. Great job, both of you. Thanks to Bill for another good question. I think he called in last week or the week before. It's 2 weeks ago with a good question as well. So that added to our conversation. So, Bill, thank you. Check out, like I said, PhillyFanatics.com, the trade deadline. Have my trade deadline story up there, Philly's notebook. Well, obviously, if a trade happens, we'll have a story on that as well. Some Eagles stuff coming up in we have Eagles training camp questions up there from last week, and we'll have some more in my fish and chips column. We have a couple minutes. I didn't get to this, but gentlemen, do either of you care about the Olympics?
I care less now after watching a show on Real Sports, the Brian Gumbel show on HBO. It was really telling about Rio and about security there and about, the Zika virus and about how a lot of the athletes, have to kind of, can't tweet out a bunch of, they sort of can't tweet out certain things about their sponsors. It's really a lot of exploitation and you hate to say this, but, if a city really isn't prepared to take on the Olympics, they really shouldn't bid for the Olympics. They promised a lot of things, and it would help their whole city as a whole. And it really is. It is still one of those cities. If you wander a few feet away from the resort area, or it's very dangerous. And so because of that, I care less than I usually do, and it's a shame because I grew up really enjoying the Olympics, and it was people you didn't always hear about, and they became kind of heroes, and they'd be on the Wheaties box and all that kind of thing, and it just makes you kind of care a lot less, and it's disappointing. It's disappointing to hear how far it's deteriorated as an entity.
Josh, you have any thoughts on the Olympics?
Yeah, not too much thoughts. I'm not too into the Olympics. I don't care too much about it.
Yeah, this doesn't seem to be the same enthusiasm there has been in the past. I think it's been diminishing, but certainly this year it really feels that way. All right, we had some bonus Olympic talk, so thank you, everybody. We will talk to you next week. Check out PhillyFanatics.com, and have a great week, everybody. Good night.